Play fake. Beathard sets up deep in the pocket. Goes down the field for Smith. Oh, he caught it! Smith! Touchdown, 85 yards, Iowa! C.J. Beathard!
Awesomeness. Good evening, everyone. I'm Hank Jones, and you are listening to Hank Jones Polysports here on Blog Talk Radio. We are part of course, Global Patriot Radio, but you hear us every day on blogtalkradio.com. I had to play that again, especially after last Saturday, because, well, it felt like turnabout was fair play a little bit. But anyway, I am Hank Jones. You are listening to Hank Jones Poly Sports here every Wednesday, 6 p.m. Eastern time, unless I give prior notification. Hey, we're here several days a week at Global Patriot Radio. Monday nights, 6 p.m. Eastern time, the Vito Esposito Show featuring Vito and Big Al. Mamma Mia No Sharia. I am here every Wednesday, 6 p.m. Eastern time. Sometimes on Thursdays, but right now with paddling still going on. Bioluminescence is out, but the paddling's still going on, so I am paddling tomorrow, so I will not be doing a hankerings. Saturday nights, 10 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time, Minister Usama Dakduk and the beautiful Christy revealing the truth about Islam. So that's what's going on right now. I know Vito and Al are working to fill out the rest of the schedule. Speaking of which, there are other shows that are really good on Block Talk Radio. Southern Sense with Annie. Audrey Russo at AudreyRusso.com has got her show. Joseph Gibson, Restoring Our Republic, Tuesday nights. I know Big Sarge has a show. Cole Show over on Spreaker, 8 o'clock on Wednesdays. Holger occasionally pops up with a show. G-Ski and Dave, G-Ski Airwaves America, the Dave and G-Ski Rock Show. I know they've been sort of on hiatus, but I don't know what their status is. Tim Tapp, Tap Into Truth, great stuff from him. All really good stuff. Really important to listen to. American Statesman, Sally. She Monday nights, she sort of half overlaps Vito and Al's show, so I'll usually listen to Vito and Al when I get a chance, and then I'll pop over and listen to Sally for a bit. Good stuff. Brother Warren evidently got bounced from Blog Talk Radio. Now, he's claiming that he was pushed off by Sarge and a couple other people. Sarge went on a show last week to basically refute that. I think people are forgetting a few things. Okay, Blog Talk Radio, yes, you can have a free account, and that even allows you like 15 minutes or 30 minutes a day to put on your own cast. Now, that is very minimal. You don't get – your shows aren't archived for – you only get a couple shows to archive. You don't get a direct call-in number. You have to use their number, and, you know, so people can't direct connect. You know, you as the host cannot direct connect. You have to dial in, which is usually a cost if you're using a cell phone. And so my guess, Brother Warren was on for about a year, and he's off. I'm just guessing. I'm spitballing here. My guess is that he just didn't pay. But I don't know that. I don't care. I honestly don't. I used to try and be nice to the guy. He called in. I took his call one time. After that, I didn't, because I hear how he talked on other shows, and I'm not about to get into it. People say, oh, Hank, aren't you going to take – yeah, I'll always listen to an opposing side. I'm not going to entertain it for any a length of time on my show, though. I'm not obligated to that. I don't dispute anyone's right to free speech. Also, don't dispute my right to not have to listen to everyone else's free speech. Why don't I get into those arguments on the show with people? I'm really not. You know, any more than I really want to take calls from people who just want to be sycophants and say, we've got to get the Republicans back in, or all Democrats are done. I don't care. I already know that. But anyway, I just thought it was interesting when I logged in and heard that Brother Warren had been bounced. And a lot of people were saying, oh, it's because of this. Nah. I mean, he did stupid stuff. Like, he'd do shows like he'd say a primer on racism, and then he would, in parentheses, he'd say for white conservatives, as if he'd say all white conservatives are racist. What a moron! I mean, see, why would I want to talk to someone like that? So bounced, and I'm sure other folks are talking about it. So what the hell? I'm here in the official Hank Jones Poly Sports Space Force Observation Outpost with my mini Aussie. Wife is resting today. She is sick, so she's got a day off, so she's hanging out over at Acoustic Hankland, but she's not working. Good for her. She needs the rest. We got back from our cruise. She was feeling a bit under the weather, so she's taking the day off, rested, taking meds and all that kind of stuff. I'm not. Hell no. I'm eating wings today. I'm drinking my black raspberry sparkling water plus my Yeti full of water. Probably going to be having a cocktail or two later tonight. Who knows? Haven't seen any good space launches, but I'll tell you what. I got back from the cruise. We were on our cruise to Alaska last week. We did trekking. We did a helicopter ride and then 2 hours of trekking, hiking on a glacier. My God. When I say my God, God's a genius. I mean, you know, Al Pacino said it in Scent of a Woman, said God must have been an effing genius. As somebody said, as we were in the boat driving by one of the glaciers, said, my God, this is God at his finest. It sure is. I mean, what a state. What a beautiful area. I mean, just unbelievable. I mean, I like the Northwest anyway, the Pacific Northwest. I could never live there. It's too far from good college football, for one thing. I'm not talking about Oregon or UCLA or USM. I'm talking about, like, Midwestern fall Saturday football. But, man, what a beautiful area. And Alaska, oh, holy crap, what a beautiful place. My wife and I talk about, we are going to go back. Probably not on a cruise, but you never know. I mean, cruises are the easiest way to see a place and see more of a place. Much harder to do just in country, as they say. But what, oh man, just unbelievable. I might post some stuff on my Facebook page just to show you how it's amazing. The color of blue that you see in the glacier water, for instance, in the ice, is just astounding. I call it Papa Smurf blue. I mean, it's unbelievable. So I got my first Laffy this week from the Babylon Bee. This is funny. This is a good one. These are the only 20 times that it's acceptable for a man to cry. Number one, when you're a soldier in the Civil War and your leg gets blown off by a cannonball. Two, Field of Dreams. Three, when you manage to mow your lawn in perfectly straight diagonal lines. Four, the Sleepy Time episode of Bluey. Don't know that one. When your son asks, Dad, can you read me this Hobbit book I found on your bookshelf? Man, I'd cry too. A toddler just performed a double knee drop from the arm of the couch onto your groin. When the Terminator is slowly lowered into the molten steel and gives one final thumbs up. The national anthem at a baseball game, yeah. Your wife is giving birth, but the hospital cafeteria is closed and you've been awake for like 10 hours and all the vending machine has is Chex Mix. Number 10, that part in the Notebook when Allie comes back to Noah for just a few fleeting moments and everything's back to normal. Guy holding hands says, haha, just kidding. This one was a test. If you cried during the Notebook, you are gay. Fighter jet flyover. Come, Mr. Frodo, Sam cried. I can't carry it for you, but I can carry you. 13, smoking a cigar while the sun sets on your kids playing in the freshly cut grass. And the chickens peck at the feed, and the smell of home-cooked dinner comes wafting out the kitchen windows. Number 14, the end of the Gladiator. Number 15, if you're a Chicago Bears fan. Number 16, while thinking about the fall of ancient Rome. Number 17, this one's legit, at the Vietnam or World War II memorials. Number 18, during Landslide by Fleetwood Mac. Yeah, I would say that's a gay moment. Number 19, when you're hanging with the bros and your buddy's like, hey, man, you doing okay? Looks like you need a hug. And then you guys hug and it's beautiful. Haha, just kidding, another test. This one's true, too. Number 20, when you're in church belting out, it is well with my soul with a bunch of old folks. Absolutely. It's okay to cry then. The second Laffy today, Democrats call for new taxes. for government to fight high junk fees. That is so friggin' perfect, because that is exactly how Big Left operates. It's exactly how Big Left operates. We need taxes to fight these. I mean, first of all, remember Dopey Joe during that one State of the Union talking about, I mean, he went on about junk fees and fees and all these other, and he's like, hotel fees. And I mean, it's like, good God. I mean, if any normal, rational person were president, would they ever really want to say that at the State of the Union? Who writes that stuff? The thing is, that's the kind of thing Obama would have said. Obama would have gone on and on about junk fees, and that dude probably never pays junk fees. Even when he wasn't rich, he probably always fought them and entitled, you know, used the self-entitlement because I'm black type stuff. So, yeah, junk fees, good Lord. Significant losses over the last couple weeks since I was gone. The 20th, we lost Ruth Fuchs. Age 76, former German politician and East German, quote-unquote, female athletes. I use air quotes, remember, because it was around that time that when they changed some criteria and suddenly Russia and Czechoslovakia and East Germany, several others, suddenly lost athletes because they weren't going to pass chromosome tests and stuff. 22nd, we lost tech businesswoman Pava LaPere. She was 26 years old. She was murdered by some convicted rapist because she didn't know she shouldn't allow the guy to go into her building with her. I mean, that's basically the gist of it. Number 923, September 23, we lost Terry Kirkman. Terry Kirkman was 83, died of heart failure. Now, you may not know the name, but Terry Kirkman was with the Association. And I met that group back in the 80s. They were past their prime, of course, but I met one of their ringleaders, a guy by the name of Jules Alexander. He was a cousin of a guy I worked with. Great guy, really nice guy. He, you know, just a normal guy. And at the time, there was this groupie who was hanging around where they were playing. They were playing at a mall here. But whatever. I mean, you play where you can. I mean, they hadn't been in the limelight, so they weren't about, you know, they weren't going to get, you know, Pontiac Silverdome. But so this lady kept, this groupie chick kept coming up and saying she was looking for Terry Kirkman, and she, you know, Terry would know her and all this stuff. Well, Terry Kirkman hadn't been playing with them for years. But she then followed, she, everywhere we went, she managed to pop up. I mean, she popped up while we were sitting in the area where they played afterwards. And then she popped up when we were sitting in the lobby talking. She popped up when we were in the dining room or in, you know, the eating. It was unbelievable. She just kept popping up, and yeah, she just knew Terry would want to see her. Yeah, sure. Okay. But anyway, Terry Kirkman, he wrote Cherish, and he wrote Everything That Touches You. Good songwriter, obviously, and a good member of the Association. And 83. Wow. The 24th, we lost former Miami Dolphin Tim Foley at the age of 75. No cause was listed. He was a member of that Dolphins team. For 11 seasons, by the way, but he was a member of that Dolphins team that won undefeated. They won two Super Bowls, lost a third. 72 season and then the 73 Super Bowl. Interesting story, actually. Back in the 1990s, I knew a guy that was always trying to recruit me into whatever multi-level marketing business that had grabbed him at the moment. We all know those folks. They get into a different multi-level marketing business that's gonna slay it for them. It's going to make them that whatever number they deem is their, in their own mind, their number that they've got to have every week to be successful or rich or whatever. So this is one of those, he's a nice enough guy, but he asked what I was doing this coming Friday. That, and rather than lie, I said I had no plans. Let's just say I should have lied, or at least I said I should have had to wash my hair or do my nails or whatever. He proceeded on a very elaborate plan to go over to the beach and then have dinner, maybe some dessert and coffee. When people say dessert and coffee like that, what's coming next usually isn't good. And I don't mean this in a bad way. Sometimes it can mean, you know, somebody that wants to evangelize you because in their mind you aren't a believer. You know, because you're not overtly out, lambasting anyone that doesn't look like you, because you might go to a bar and they think immediately you don't have God in your heart. We all know those folks. But this wasn't that. This is one of those multi-level marketing things. Said, how about we do that? And then how would I like to stop in and hear Tim Foley speak? And stupid me, I said, the football player? And the answer, of course, was, he's just a double diamond or whatever it was. It was an Amway thing. He's just a double diamond in the business. He's one of those double secret handshake plate spinner experts. You know, I mean, it's like this secret code. Amway has it. They all have it. You know, double diamond, double palm tree, triple axle winner, whatever. He's just a double diamond business. Thus was my education in learning to avoid anyone who had ever tried to get me into multi-level marketing. I mean, it didn't mean I didn't talk to the guy, but I made sure to put myself in spots where I was never alone so that I could be accosted about going, how'd you like to go in here? No. And it's not that I have anything against people making their money that way. I really don't. It's just not me. It's not my style. It's not my comfort level. I also, with the time, worked in a family business, so I really didn't have that kind of time. But yeah, Tim Foley was quite a money maker in Amway. Hey, don't knock it. I mean, Amway is what paid for Rich DeVos to buy the Orlando Magic years ago. So. On September 25th, David McCallum, lost him. He was 90, natural causes. His most famous role, Ilya Kariakis, in The Man from U.N.C.L.E. He was also in NCIS, like resurgence in his career. He was in 1963's The Great Escape. He also did a song called The Edge, which, believe it or not, was sampled for Ice Cube's smash hit The Next Episode. Yeah, believe it or not. The 26th, we lost former Baltimore Oriole third baseman Brooks Robinson from heart disease. He was 86. 18-time All-Star, 1970 World Series MVP, won 16 Golden Gloves. Class guy through and through. I mean, he was always a good interview, very gracious and humble. The 27th, we lost former English-Irish actor Michael Gambon to pneumonia at age 82. Remember, he appeared in Harry Potter as Dumbledore after Richard Harris died. He was also in The Singing Detective, Gosford Park. He was in that movie Mobsters. It was a crappy movie, but it sort of told the story of how the commission got started, Frank Costello, Charlie Luciano, etc. He played Salvatore Maranzano. He's also in two favorite movies of mine, little known, or two favorite, a movie called Squanto, A Warrior's Tale. And then he was in a TV series called Fortitude. I don't know if that was British or it takes place like on a Norwegian territory island. But weird but good series. Dennis Quaid was actually in it. 928, former Romanian DJ Lala, age 34. Surprisingly, she was not shot. She drowned. But usually the DJ rap community, whatever, they get shot or whatever. She was not. She drowned. The 29th, we lost former women's pro wrestler Joyce Grable, 70 years old. She passed away in hospice care. That same day, we also saw the death of California Senator Dianne Feinstein at age 90, or Feinstein. I won't lionize her in any way. Sorry if that offends anyone. By the way, California Governor Gavin Newsom has already appointed a replacement. Who happens to live in Maryland? Oh, God. Typical California, typical big left. The first, we lost former Boston Red Sox knuckleballer pitcher Tim Wakefield to brain cancer at 57. He was a two-time World Series champ. We also lost Russ Francis in a plane crash near Lake Placid, along with former Air Force Thunderbird pilot commander Richard McSpadden. They were in a plane that evidently lost power. They tried to return and they crashed into a berm at the end of the runway and went down into a ravine. Russ Francis was 70, played with the Patriots. Then he played with the 49ers. He actually set the national high school javelin record in 1971 and it stood till 1988. You want to know whose record he broke? Anybody? Terry Bradshaw. Terry Bradshaw was a national high school javelin record holder, and then Russ Francis broke it. Don't forget my friends at Alliance Communications, Central Florida's 24-hour call center for messaging and answering services for your medical clinic, service business, large or small, hospital clinic, information gathering services, government agencies. If you're one of those companies that never returned to an office after COVID, they're perfect. Perfect void they can fill, because they can be your front line. Doesn't mean you don't have to keep some of your same people, but they can be that front line so some of those people can do real work. They can handle your after-hours messaging, information gathering, survey response. They also work with remote staff, so things like hurricanes or snowstorms don't affect them in the grand scheme of things. Give them a call, 800-555-3738, or check them out at www.alliancecommunications.com. Another internet laffy from the Babylon Bee: Representative Bowman pulls fire alarm while trying to flush urinal. Oh, God. Okay, here's a Yahoo article that sort of sums up the kind of people we're dealing with in the indictments of New Jersey Senator Robert Menendez and his wife Nadine, who in a cheap-looking way is sort of hot. I just noticed pictures of her. She does look sort of hot, but she's cheap-looking as well. So this is from New Jersey. It was a cold evening in December 2018, and Nadine Arzlanian, the soon-to-be wife of Senator Bob Menendez, was zipping through the darkened streets of suburban New Jersey in a black Mercedes-Benz sedan. She would later tell the police she did not see the man stepping out in front of her to cross a busy thoroughfare. The crash that ensued just after 7:30 p.m. killed the man, Richard Koop, 49, almost instantly. His body was thrown to the curb just steps from his home and badly mangled, according to the Bergen County Medical Examiner. After brief questioning, the police concluded that Arzlanian, who was alone in the vehicle, was, quote, not at fault. She was released without a summons. What happened that night in the borough of Bogota outside New York City was not reported for years, leaving witnesses and Koop's family to wonder if the fatal collision was deliberately kept quiet. But now, nearly 5 years later, the episode adds a startling dimension to a scandal that has shaken American politics and raised new questions about the senator at its center. It's not shaken. Come on. The revelation helps fill in an important narrative gap around one of the most blatant bribes alleged in a 39-page federal indictment unveiled last month against Nadine Menendez, her powerful husband, and three business people. Prosecutors said in those charging papers that Nadine Menendez needed a car so badly after a December 2018 accident that the senator, a Democrat, was willing to try to suppress an unrelated criminal prosecution for a New Jersey business person in exchange for a $60,000 Mercedes convertible. Fatal collision with Koop on December 12th matches prosecutors' terse description of the December 2018 crash. Interviews, police reports, dash cam footage, and other records reviewed by the New York Times also raise additional questions about the inquiry into the collision itself, which was reported earlier by the Record of New Jersey. Questions include whether Bob Menendez, a senator long accused of using the levers of government to help his friends, may have made an attempt to intervene. There were reasons for suspicion at the time. One witness at the scene said in an interview that officers appeared to know who Nadine Menendez was and treated her with striking deference. Police recordings captured the voice of a man who identifies himself as a retired police officer from a nearby department. He can be heard saying he came to the scene as a favor, unquote, to a friend whose wife knew Nadine Menendez. The police reports indicate she was never tested for drugs or alcohol and was allowed to leave the scene not long before Koop was declared dead at a nearby hospital. 3 days later, police investigators were sent to local bars to get more information on Koop, where Koop had been in the hours before his death. Koop's sister, Rosemarie Koop Angelicola, said the family never heard a word from Nadine Menendez or the senator after the crash, and little from local authorities. The family really has had serious concerns over what we felt was a very sparse, one-sided investigation, she said in an interview. Definitely a lack of legal enthusiasm to take this case. definite lack of media coverage and a lack of communication by the authorities of Bergen County. We felt that the whole thing was very silently swept under the rug. The senator, 69, and Aideen Menendez, 56, have each pleaded not guilty to the bribery-related charges, and the senator insists prosecutors are twisting facts to make legitimate congressional activity look nefarious. In an interview, David Schertler, a lawyer for Aideen Menendez, called the car crash a tragic accident, but one that was unrelated to the charges she is currently facing. My understanding was this individual ran in front of her car and she was not at fault, Schertler said. Officers from the Bogota Police Department did not return a string of calls that began Friday seeking comments. A spokesperson for the Bergen County Prosecutor's Office, which would have been responsible for any decision to charge Menendez, also did not respond to a request for comment. Bob and Nadine Menendez had been in an on-again, off-again relationship for much of 2018. He was a divorced, high-ranking senator reelected for a third term that November. She was also divorced, socially outgoing, and 13 years his junior. People close to Bob Menendez had encouraged him to walk away, concerned that Nadine Menendez, unemployed and fond of flashy jewelry and designer shoes with a mysterious circle of friends, had champagne taste on a beer budget, according to three people familiar with the conversations, who did not want to be identified because the discussions were private. But by December, the couple's bond appeared to be growing stronger. According to prosecutors, Nadine Menendez had already introduced her future husband to an Egyptian-American friend she had known for nearly a decade, Wael Hanna. Wael Hanna. She helped organize a series of dinners and meetings that prosecutors say formed the beginning of a corrupt scheme to use the senator's power to improperly help the Egyptian government in return for bribes. They would soon have reason to call upon those connections again. Police reports do not state where Nadine Menendez was going the night she struck Ku Klux, New Jersey, but dash cam footage obtained by the Times through an open records request shows she was dressed in a fur coat and mid-length dress. Coop was coming home from an evening at nearby bars. Family members said he took an Uber home that night that dropped him across the street from his apartment moments before he was struck. Surveillance video from a nearby car shop that captured part of the collision shows Coop propelled off Menendez's car and out of the curb as she slammed on the brakes. The crash badly damaged Menendez's car. Her front windshield was shattered and had front-end damage on the passenger side, which was later determined to be from a parked car that she struck after striking Mr. Coop. A police sergeant wrote in an incident report later. The senator was away in Washington that night, according to Senate voting records. But after Christmas, he accompanied Nadine Menendez to a towing company's lot to collect her belongings from the car, a company official told the Times. He would also prove integral to replacing it, prosecutors said. In the indictment, they mentioned nothing more about the collision than that it left her without a car. But court papers clarify what prosecutors allege came next. They said Nadine Menendez sent multiple text messages to Hanna complaining she did not have a car. But two friends, Bob Menendez and another New Jersey business person who was close to Hanna, Jose Uribe, soon agreed to terms to rectify that. According to the indictment, Bob Menendez agreed to call a senior prosecutor at the New Jersey Attorney General's office in late January to try to pressure him to go easy on an associate of Uribe. Uribe, in return, agreed to finance a car, prosecutors said. His lawyer could not immediately be reached for comment, of course. Kind of weird, huh? All is great. I am so excited to get a car next week, Nadine Menendez texted Hanna a few days after the senator placed the call. In April, 4 months after Coop's death, Nadine Menendez signed paperwork to purchase a new $60,000 Mercedes-Benz C300 convertible. She told Uribe by text that she would, quote, never forget this, and messaged Bob Menendez to celebrate too. Congratulations, mon amour de la vie, Nadine Menendez wrote to Bob Menendez, according to the indictment. We are the proud owners of a 2019 Mercedes. A lot of secrecy, this is heady. There is nothing in police explicitly noted in police incident reports or the videos reviewed by the Times to indicate that officers knew of the driver's relationship with the senator. But Sergio Uribe, who owned the parked car Menendez hit after Coop, recalled hearing the driver repeatedly telling officers she was going to call someone as they secured the scene that night. He said he did not know Nadine Menendez's identity at the time, but suspected she was, quote, unquote, someone important. Sergio Uribe is not related to Jose Uribe. I don't know if she was well-known or lived nearby or the police knew her, but there appeared to be a lot of secrecy, he said in an interview in Spanish. I remember saying, that woman is just allowed to leave. She's not being arrested or anything. Surveillance video shows that Menendez stayed in her car after striking Coop, eventually moving the vehicle a few car lengths in front of where his body came to rest. She does not appear to have approached him before the authorities arrived and found no pulse. In that time, Menendez appears to have clearly contacted someone. Within roughly 30 minutes of the collision, a man who identified himself to police as a retired officer from nearby Hackensack arrived to help her. I don't even know her, the man could be heard saying. That's my buddy's wife who's friends with her. He said, could you do me a favor and take her up there because her friend just got in a car accident. The former officer is not identified by name, but he later asks the Bogota police if prosecutors will need to be involved. They indicate they are preparing to release her. Why was the guy in the middle of the street? Menendez could be heard asking an officer in the same video before repeating, he jumped on my windshield. It is determined that at this time, Ms. Arslanian was not at fault for the motor vehicle crash and that Mr. Coop was jaywalking, the Bogota sergeant wrote in his report the next day. The autopsy report would later show that Coop had alcohol and marijuana in his system. His family said it had never understood why Menendez was not tested for substances, too. The dead man was drug and alcohol tested, but the driver wasn't, Coop Angelicola said. Things like that just don't play fair in our mind. But veteran criminal defense lawyers said it was not unusual for the police not to test Menendez for alcohol or other substances the night of the crash. Joseph D. Rotella, a past president of the Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers of New Jersey, said authorities must demonstrate probable cause that a driver was impaired before testing for alcohol immediately after the crash, even in the case of a pedestrian fatality. Often, in the hours after a fatal car accident, county prosecutors will seek a warrant to test the driver's blood. But unless investigators have demonstrated probable cause, judges can and do deny warrants, said Rotella, who has been a criminal defense lawyer for 37 years in New Jersey. Sometimes accidents are just accidents, nothing more, he said. A patrol officer on the scene did ask to search Menendez's cell phone. She initially consented, but quickly asked for it back, he wrote in his account. At one point, she indicated she would not answer additional questions without a lawyer present. A police report leader indicated that authorities issued a subpoena for Menendez's phone records, presumably to see if she had been calling or texting at the time of the accident. But it does not indicate what the search yielded or if it was even completed. The episode left Coop's family and friends devastated. He was divorced at the time he died, but devoted to his son. His sister described him as a small-town guy, an avid fisherman, enthusiastic coach, and a regular at the local bars. He had worked for years at the Javits Center in New York City, but his employment was spottier in later years. Nothing too complicated on how he lived his life, she said. Very, very unpretentious person. Friends of Coop's from Westside Village Tavern in Ridgefield Park, a small bar about a mile from his apartment, attached a plaque in his memory to his favorite bar stool after the crash. They have kept his quick draw lottery number stored behind the bar in the bartender's Bible, a drink recipe book. Veronica Van Landingham, the tavern's manager and bartender, said she was interviewed by the police who were trying to retrace his steps. She said she did not get the impression they were trying to prove anything in particular, but just understand where he had been the day he died. The thing that got everybody was he was trying to do the right thing and take an Uber, and then this happens, she said. Danielle DeBouter, Coop's ex-wife, was called to identify his body hours later. She said he was almost unrecognizable. She only learned of the connection between Nadine Menendez and the senator later through a family lawyer. We always wondered what actually happened that horrible night. So much was left unanswered. I don't know if we will ever know the truth. That's what you're dealing with. That's what you're dealing with. You're dealing with people who, in the aftermath of an accident, are worried about their car, are worried about accountability. I mean, if it was a complete accident, then she had nothing to hide. First thing I would have said was, absolutely look at my phone. Absolutely look at my phone. I also would have said, absolutely test me. I mean, there's a lot, you know, I'm not saying they say it's not smart to do that, but just, you know, when you look at this and then how she got her car and it looks like Menendez, the senator went to bat. I mean, yeah, it's pretty sleazy. And that's what you're dealing with, though. That's you're dealing with people that don't give a crap about commoners. Really, that's it. There's nothing more to it than that. In addition to the United Auto Workers strike, we now have a strike by workers in the healthcare sector. Yes, 75,000 workers of Kaiser Health, you might have heard of Kaiser Permanente, they walked off their jobs protesting that insufficient staffing is harming patients. By the way, nothing will guarantee insufficient staffing quicker than 75,000 healthcare workers walking off the job. Seriously, does nobody in the media see this or want to even discuss it rationally? We have an installed president that's being manipulated by people who are anti-capitalist. They are not anti-business. They are not anti-wealth. They are not anti-industry. What they are is anti-independence. They're also anti-achievement. They don't believe in achievement because, for the most part, these people have not, by themselves or by their own effort, achieved a damn thing. One way they achieve, if you want to call it that, is by turning people against each other, by class, race, ideology, religion, sexuality, gender, location, whatever. They pit Southerner against Northerner, black against white, homosexual against heterosexual, bizarre against normal. How do they do that? Well, by they tell the black man that anything white is bad. Everything that's happening is whitey's fault. They tell bizarro world that normal doesn't exist. Tell them that anyone who believes in the founding principles of the United States is all evil, all the evil rolled into one group and class. Have you ever noticed that big left has never mentioned a conservative middle class? You know, they never talk about middle class conservatives. They talk about upper crust or poor conservatives from the old country. They never talk about normal middle class conservatives. You know why? Because that would apply to the self-identity of a hell of a lot more people than they are comfortable talking about or taking on en masse. And we're now seeing it with these labor disruptions. They don't mention that the reason for the problems the auto industry actually faces was created by elitists who weren't on the inside, and being the evil, spiteful, disgusting people they are, they couldn't stop at getting a piece of the union. They had to destroy the companies. After they gave major portions of the companies to the unions sold off those stocks. And now they seek to destroy those industries by regulating them into corners. No more internal combustion engines. No more fossil fuels. No more coal power. No more oil drilling. No more fracking. No more gas appliances. No more traditional electricity. So they then pit eco-terrorists against normal, everyday people. They tell us we can't eat meat. We can't hunt or fish. No development. Because any and all property is ecologically sensitive. I mean, what the hell? I keep saying this, but it's time. I'm sorry. It's time we got rid of elected officials who get wealthy just by being in Congress. It's time we stopped lionizing people like Dianne Feinstein, when in reality the world can't possibly get worse now that she's no longer around. I don't care if that sounds heartless. I don't care. She was worthless. She was greedy. She was corrupt. She wasn't a paragon of the people. It's time we stopped accepting media as an entity that wants to report truth, when in reality these people thrive on gossip and scandal, an unbridled quest for control of anything and everything they deem theirs. They will sell out average citizens all day long to be in bed with the powerful and the elite. Media, government, sports, business, academia, it doesn't matter. All of the elitists in all of those fields share a lust for wealth and power. They get scientists to lie in furthering that aim. They get media to lie to tell us we are the problem. They tell one side the other is bad in order to create more and more chaos. So it's time. Stop accepting elected officials telling us they'll look into it. Jesus, stop buying from Ben and Jerry's. Stop allowing local utilities to tell us we use too much power, but never accept accountability for providing, or worse, not providing it safely or adequately when we need it most. Stop telling Travis Kelce or Taylor Swift how much we love them. Stop using cable or streaming services when they can't come to an agreement with a network affiliate and that we'll just have to bite the higher fees in order to keep watching Dancing with the Stars or CSI or whatever the hell it is. Stop accepting price hikes from Netflix while they pay the Obamas ungodly sums to produce programs that tell us America sucks and that we should be glad we suck as long as they can be rich. Stop allowing the NCAA, the National Football League, the National Basketball Association, or Major League Baseball, stop allowing them to disrespect American military and law enforcement while they elevate men that dress up as women or elevate adults that want to molest children. Stop accepting as valid any election returns that looked incorrect or improbable. Stop accepting that. Stop accepting decisions of politically motivated judges or the filings of vindictive prosecutors. In other words, for God's sakes, stop. We won't ever change it, that lamentation. And stop with, they'll always be able to cheat, that moping. Stop the crap with, I'm quitting Facebook or Twitter or whatever the hell. Just quit. If you want to quit, just quit. Let people like Rob Reiner announce they're leaving. We're normal people. We should have the dignity to leave without ever having to explain it. And can we please, please stop with the RFK Jr. is a maverick hero in the Trump mold garbage. He is the epitome of a born into perpetuation of the self-entitled idiocy that brought this country, the Kennedy family. These people, for those who have forgotten their history, were the Biden family before Dopey Joe was thrust onto the scene. The Kennedys were literally the original Biden crime family. None of this will end until each of us says loudly and with conviction, stop. Good God. Healthcare workers walking up. These are people that got paid hundreds of thousands of dollars to stay in healthcare during and after COVID. I've talked to nurses who are making $200,000 a year. Of course, it still wasn't enough. Stop it. Healthcare workers walking off the job. Jesus. The House removed California Republican Kevin McCarthy as Speaker yesterday. The Speaker pro tem is Patrick McHenry, Republican from North Carolina. He has at least told Plastic Pelosi to get the hell out of her office and move to an office where the rest of the merely wealthy Congress types work versus the obscenely wealthy who have benefited from being in Congress. Seriously, I have heard and read and discussed both sides of this issue. Some believe it makes the GOP look foolish. To that I say, really? I mean, allowing two impeachments of President Trump, not prosecuting people or intelligence agencies for falsely going after him, or worse, not allowing full revelation of Hunter Biden's escapades, didn't already do that, this, for you to think the GOP looks foolish? On the other side, I've heard, the job of finding a new speaker may not be as easy as now. And it's not like Big Left, frankly, won't impede and sabotage every chance they get. And what about our Speaker pro tem, North Carolina's Patrick McHenry? I know people are saying, I like this move. Well, I like his quick move to get Pelosi off her ass for a couple hours. Let's remember, this guy worked under Karl Rove, George W. Bush, Elaine Chao. Yeah, that's not exactly a murderer's row of anti-swamp folks. Now, why should we care? Well, the fact that Dems went along with Matt Gaetz tells me he either worked with them or they fear McCarthy. Another sobering fact, it only took Gaetz to make this go down. Think about that. That's the kind of slim majority Republicans are already playing with. So what does it mean? Do we actually believe an impeachment is coming? People say, well, that'll slow that down. No, it won't. Do we actually believe any of the J6 committee will be held accountable? Of course not. Do we actually believe true spending cuts and sound economics are just around the corner Same with a government shutdown had it occurred. And by the way, it still could occur. But if that does happen, do we actually believe Dopey Joe will stop with executive orders or that courts will suddenly be returned to be trustworthy? Already been broken. Matt Gaetz said that. To say Gaetz stirred a hornet's nest is exaggerating. Let's not forget, it took 15 ballot elections to get McCarthy into the position of Speaker of the House in the first place. And so here then, this is the question. If Dopey Joe were gone in any number of ways, and then Kamala shortly after, which again could happen, would you have felt good with Kevin McCarthy as our president? That's the position that I take, i.e., how would I feel about this person as president? If I wouldn't want that person to be president, I don't want them to be speaker. I mean, I felt that way about John Boehner. Yes, the House majority was with the GOP, but I wouldn't want a John Boehner as president. So why should I have wanted him as speaker? It's a valid question. It's an important question. Just because a party has a majority in the House doesn't mean that the Speaker of the House, which presumably comes from that majority party, will be a good choice. Sage Steele, formerly of ESPN, she went off on The View, among other things, on Bill Maher's show, but she also went off on Biden. She was interviewing him, and they had a screen over him before the interview because they were having tech issues. They were doing a satellite interview. And she talked about what an idiot he was. And she said several things. One, you know, I have the best hands. What do you say to that? I mean, that kind of creepy stuff. But she said, you know, she said, Sage Steele is black, female. She did not vote for Obama. She did not vote for Biden. She doesn't love Trump as a person. But they bonded over one of them was football, and another was Trump's, as she put it, behind-the-scenes efforts to get sports back from COVID. She also said she's thoroughly entertained by his tweets and the craziness that he puts on Twitter. And Bill Maher actually applauded that. And she talked about those. She says, look, I don't love or hate Donald Trump. She says, but I look at what's best for our country, our national security, and our economy. She says, so I separate the personal stuff and not look at the crazy. I look at what's best for our economy. And she talked about Dopey Joe. She said it's real simple. She said, I realized why Biden was in the basement the whole election cycle. Because she says, even then, he couldn't finish his sentences. She said, forget about politics. I don't care. I don't vote. She says, I didn't vote for him. However, she says, that makes me very sad. She said, how did the family let this happen? So you can imagine that she's going to be bounced at some point. Hey, Vito and Joe Gibson in the house. The Duck Northwest Media is already in the chat room earlier and is still there. You know, I forgot to mention that I talked about our shows, but I forgot to mention, you know, there are several ways you can interact with our show, of course. You can check in online, www.blogtalkradio.com. Go to live, and you get a come up, the screen will come up, and you look down in the lower right-hand corner, and you can see Patriot Radio and the number of people in the chat room. You click in there. Now, you're not going to come in with an identity, but if you do log in with an account, and as I mentioned before, your account gets you free, like 15 minutes a day if you wanted to do a podcast. Doesn't have to be good. I'm living proof of that. But, you know, it gives you 15 minutes. So if you ever want to do it, you can. You know, I said, it doesn't a paid account. And as I said, talking about Brother Warren getting bounced, I Joe Gibson, who I know was on the show and on Vito's chat room. Joe had his show last night. I don't know if he talked about Brother Warren, but I know it got mentioned in this chat room. I'm convinced Brother Warren just didn't want to pay for his Blog Talk Radio, or whoever was paying for Brother Warren didn't want to pay for it. Because for Brother Warren to say that he got conservatives knocked him out, that's crap. If you really want to know, go into Blog Talk Radio, look through everything. It literally runs the gamut from conservative to liberal to flat out bonkers. Everything from sports to reading crystals to eating cocoa leaves or whatever. I mean, so Brother Warren saying that he got bounced because a couple people put in, it's wrong. He's lying. But that's what he does. So anyway, Vito, Duck, and Joe Gibson in the house. So anyway, Sage Steele, you got to believe she's, you know, going to get blackballed, so to speak. And then, of course, we got this from an NBA player who's not even from America. Lovely. Yusuf Nurkic. Addressed guns in America. Phoenix Suns just acquired him from the Trailblazers in the multi-trade that sent Damian Lillard to Milwaukee. While the Bosnian player was vocal about his excitement regarding the move, he didn't shy away from a more serious topic during media day. He was candid in response to a seemingly lighthearted question about confusing aspects of the American experience. He said, "I still don't know why everybody has so many guns. I feel like I still don't understand to this day because I feel the kids should be safe in our schools," he added. "I think personally when you see even the fake guns on social media and kids in schools, it's a bad thing, and sometimes you can't control certain things with this media, all the social media we have platforms, but I think our kids, if we can secure them, the better world going forward, it will definitely be without guns." Is this guy a moron? His own country's living proof of what happens when you disarm the people. Who put this dude up to this? That's what I don't understand. Feel like I still don't understand to this day because I feel the kids should be safe in our schools. What does that have to do with it? I think personally when you see even the fake guns on social media and kids in schools, it's a bad thing. What the? Good Lord. I mean, I know English might not be his first language, but what in the hell? So they've got that going on in the NBA this year. And then we get this shocker from D.C. This is an actual good thing when I say shocker. Okay, so Dopey Joe, with one of his executive orders, tried to take federal funding from any school that did archery or any kind of stuff like that. So, believe it or not, the House voted 424-1 to tell him wrong. He took advantage, he tried to take this bipartisan Safer Communities Act to strip federal funding to schools with hunting and archery programs. Education Department said the hunter education and wilderness safety courses use, quote, technically dangerous weapons, unquote. Polt says before letting his leftist minions run wild, because now he faces an almost unanimous resolution to strip that away from the Education Department. House approved the Protecting Hunting Heritage and Education Act, 424-1. One person, Representative Veronica Escobar, Democrat from Texas, voted against it. Representative Mark Green from Tennessee introduced the bill August 1st, said American students should be encouraged to participate in enriching athletic activities that foster an appreciation for nature and ability to focus on a goal. Hunters and fishers are the best conservationists. My Protecting Hunting and Heritage and Education Act is critical for our children. Talk about this. And literally in high school, we had archery. I don't know if we had gun classes, but we definitely had archery. it was not uncommon to see people with gun racks on trucks where I grew up. I grew up in about 40 miles west of Chicago in a place that was not at all redneck, but I mean, I literally could walk out west of my house. I'd say a half mile, but really probably more safer to say a mile, because a half mile still would have had probably some. But I mean, cornfields, we could hunt pheasant right there, and did, in fact. Gun safety, you would think that gun safety would be like the thing from the gun grabbing crowd, right? Because you would think, well, if kids are going to have guns anyway, they obviously do. Because all these efforts in, you know, heretofore up until now have resulted in zero reduction in shootings. So Joe Gibson asking if I'm taking calls. I absolutely am, Joseph. Fire away. Because, yes, I got to talk football later, but in the meantime, I'm always willing to talk to Joe Gibson. So he should be dialing in shortly, hopefully. But, yeah, I mean, you would think. I mean, they talk about, you know, think of it this way. They want sex education in the schools to prevent pregnancy. They're showing kids how to use condoms. Telling people, you know, go for other types of sex if you must. I mean, I think that's a fine thing to tell a seventh grader, but whatever, what the hell. But, I mean, seriously, you know, they're talking about they have to educate kids about sex. We have to educate kids about social media. We have to educate kids about this. But they talk about gun violence, but for some reason, guns aren't something we should educate on. I believe this is him. Joe, this you?
Yes, it is. Good guess.
How you doing, sir?
Doing all right. Just a couple subjects you were talking about there. One was the Warren, brother Warren, I guess. I don't know if he ever called into your show or not, but he was frequently calling into mine and several others on Blog Talk Radio. That was a good analysis that you made there about him not paying the bill, probably, because he's an attention seeker.
Yep. Absolutely.
And that's what they do. Then that's what they do. And he was just all, every time he would call in, this is what we have to see. I don't want to make a show about him, but what I'm trying to do is this is the warning that we have to see out there. This is the people that add fuel to the fires out there that we don't need. And they create division amongst the people. And he was pro-China, and he used these talking points to plant seeds into people's minds and create division amongst the races, amongst the political parties. And that's what these woke and these people that have certain agendas do. See, our agenda is freedom. And there's nothing.
Absolutely.
And that's what our country is about, freedom and deregulation and not censorship. That's what we're about. And people just for some reason don't understand that in today's world because they've been brainwashed and hypnotized by these communist, fascist, Marxist, Stalinist, whatever you want to call them, radical, non-believing, unfreedom-loving people. And there's sickness and a disease in this country, and we've got to eliminate it. And I'm glad, though, he was silenced because we don't need people like that.
Yeah, I mean, I took one call from him on the Colin Kaepernick issue. And he, of course, Vito made a good point that when people go around and try and get in on every show, you know, they probably have a show of their own that they're trying to promote or whatever. And that's what he was doing, you know. I mean, that's what he was doing. So, I mean, you know, I didn't have a – he was cordial to me. I quickly cut him off. I mean, he went on about Kaepernick, and I just laid out the facts about Colin Kaepernick. I mean, I said, look, the guy can't make all the throws, which you kind of want in a quarterback. I said he makes a fine backup for a lot of teams, but I mean, he's not the quarterback. I mean, he just wasn't. You know, nothing wrong with the guy.
No, he wasn't.
I mean, nothing wrong with on the football field. Off the football field, I think Colin Kaepernick is a petulant, self-centered, ungrateful little prick, if you will. But you know, that, so that was it. I mean, other times when he got on, I heard him calling on Vito's show, Vito and Al's show, heard him calling on others. And so, you know, when I saw that he was wanting to call, I just didn't take his call. I you know, and I didn't say anything. He never asked. He never asked in the chat. So, you know, and that's why I had said before, if I don't know who you are, ask in the chat. You know, I know you, so I'm going to take your call. But I mean, I, you know, ask in the chat if I don't know who you are. You know, I mean, I just don't really. I don't have 2 hours, or I don't have 30 minutes to get into it with people like that. You know, I just don't. And so, you know, like I said, you know, look, I totally believe in Brother Warren's right to freedom of speech. Totally. Absolutely.
Sure.
And, you know, but that doesn't extend
to
him.
Isn't it amazing? Isn't it amazing, though, that the people that can't stand the foundations of this country, can't stand our founding fathers and what they fought and died for and what they brought to this country, that they that they're the first ones to use the First Amendment and use the same things that they fought for? And bled for, and our, and what our veterans have fought for. The first ones, they're the first ones, but they criticize it all day long.
Sure.
It's so hypocritical.
ask Vito sometime, either off show or whatever. I heard Vito a long time ago that he used to – Vito used to do another show, radio show, on an actual radio station that I heard, and they had this guy that was on, a Muslim guy, who I think – actually talked about, well, yeah, we use the Constitution against America. That's our whole point, is that we use it against you. You know, and that's what Brother Warren is.
Yeah.
You know, Brother Warren talks all about free speech and free – but then, you know, I must, you know, I must agree with his speech. I mean, his – did you hear the show where Sarge called in? I don't remember the show. I listened to it the other night. And Brother Warren, first of all, he wouldn't let Sarge talk, but he went on and on about this. I mean, it was like, dude, you're not even making sense. I mean, they become irrational. I mean, Sarge was really you know, Sarge just laid it out, you know, and it's, you know, and that's why I said, I don't have time. I'm not going to lay it out for a guy just for, so he doesn't want to listen to it. I mean, what's the point, you know? So anyway, so what else is going
on? Sarge has been on Blog Talk Radio for many, many years, and that's what we have to do. And we're the voices out there that are fighting for freedom. So you're right. We don't have time in today's fight for this nonsense. You're
absolutely
correct. But
not.
So what else is going on? My filing will be in December. Of course, you know, I'm running for North Carolina House of Representatives here in my district, District 65. The filing will be in December. So the campaign is already, you know, I'm already starting to go out there and campaign. And, you know, I did put together a voter integrity act, me and another podcaster, actually, and we spread it around Blog Talk Radio. I don't know if you received it, probably not, but we were trying to promote and get the podcasters.
Is that what you put? Is that the link Is that the link you put in the chat?
No. I didn't put it in here this time. No, I might have done it in the past. This was about a month ago, but I'm just using it as an example of some of the things that we're trying to do and what I'm going to be standing for is, you know, and I'm campaigning on is restore our Constitution, restoring constitutional principles and the de jure form of government and restore common law basically because we're destroying ourselves. With all these codified laws and statutes that don't make any sense. I mean, we have legislators around the country that are just going wild with the pen. I mean, they're creating these public policies and rules that are destroying our liberties, our freedoms, and over-regulating. I mean, they're just going crazy. Look at the Biden administration. Look what they've done already, look what they overturned and what Trump did. And look what they're doing now. Look what's happening now with the House of Representatives. Everything's just falling apart, and they're doing this by design, I believe, and, you know, I can't analyze the whole thing quickly for you on your podcast here, but common sense would say that this is being done so by design. And we patriots out there have got to be alert and stand fast and stand firm on our beliefs and what we believe and never give in at all.
Nope, never give in. I mean, the idea, number one, that when they talk about democracy is at stake absolutely infuriates me. I mean,
we're Republican, the one.
Yeah. Do they have such little regard for? I mean, I guess that's it. You're like, it's by design. They want us to think it's a democracy. They want us to think. I mean, in a sense, we're not the Republic. You know, we as John Lofgren. I don't know if you know John has pointed out. In a real sense, we're a bicameral democracy. When the Senate went to popular vote. You know, the the 17th Amendment, I guess it was, you know, when it changed that.
Well,
it began with the
Reconstruction Acts. It began with the Reconstruction Acts of 1871, and then, of course, you know, they bankrupted us by the creation of the Federal Reserve and la-da-da-da-da all the way down the timeline of history, you know. So, I understand fully what's happened.
I guess it's the fact they have such little regard for not so much for people who stand – I mean – in a real sense, for small businesses, I mean, who have really, you know, made the investment over the years, and just such little regard that they would do the things they do.
Regard for the people, for what they need, the needs of the people. And that's one of the things, too, I'd like to restore, is the voice of the people, especially here in North Carolina. You know, people have got to have a voice. We've got to have a voice again and become involved. And really, we're to blame also for not becoming more involved. A lot of people out there are starting to wake up now, but it may be a little too late, you know, because our government has so been hijacked. And we've got to restore our republic. We have got to. Yep. I mean, it's just really – so very much important, and I don't want to take up too much of your time here, but, you know, just my campaign is not the only campaign out there. We have to have grassroots candidates across the board. 2024 is a very important election, and we have to make sure we have voter integrity and make sure the voting machines and the voting ballots out there are not corrupted like 2020, and we don't make the same mistake again. So be diligent. Pay attention out there and be a part of your community. You know, take action. You can do it.
I mean, if you heard my rant earlier, one of the things I said, stop accepting this stuff. I mean, you know, at a certain point, when my representative, who is Maxwell Frost, he was the first Gen Z person elected to the House and all this. And he was virtue signaling that he didn't have, you know, he didn't have the proper credit rating, and it's unfair that he wasn't able to get housing in D.C. right away. This guy had... he raised $4 million, which was literally 10 times the rest of his competitors combined. And I'm talking both sides. In other words, between Democrats and Republicans, he raised 10 times the whole of them. Vito pointed out he probably got his money from the Muslim Brotherhood and some of the Muslim interests, which I think is true because of some of his anti-Israel state. But, I mean, this guy starts virtue signaling about that, and it's like, really? You mean you're going to try and convince us that you're not allowed to take some of your campaign funds to establish space in Washington? He made it sound like, I mean, he didn't actually ask for funds. He didn't go that far because somebody in his group probably told, you know. But, I mean, it's, you know, he was on, I saw him on last week about, and I didn't even listen because I just have such little regard for the guy. But it's, you know, it's my own fault that I haven't stood up more and said, you know what, I'm calling BS on this. This is, you know, you're lying, or what you're doing is counter to our to the founding principles of this country, not to mention the principles of this country. But, you know, because we don't stand up, we have to stand up. When you're watching TV and, you know, and it says something and it turns and the vote counts turn stuff, we shouldn't just sit there and say, oh, gosh, you know, look at those people on whatever network it is. I don't care what network. Look at them. They're reporting. Look at that turnaround. Well, no. You know, I mean, Steve Dace said something at one point in 2020. He said, you know, he talked about a couple of states. He says, all Biden needs is a mere 88% of the remaining vote to win. And as he said, but with vote counts stopping, nothing's impossible. In other words, the fact the way they stopped it and did, I mean, you know, we let that happen. You know, we literally let that happen.
We did. Yeah.
So it's our own fault.
I was out there shouting the next day. But now, you know, we could talk about yesterday all day long. We just need to learn from yesterday and not make the same mistakes tomorrow. You know, and today what we need to be doing is look, we have the tools at our fingertips. We have the online podcasting. You're out there with your voice, and many of your listeners, my listeners, our voices together. That's the problem with patriots out there. We're all doing so many different things. We have too many chiefs and not enough Indians. So we have to unite our voices together and stay together and work together in the fight. Put our little pennies and our little $100 bills together and outdo these rich George Soros crowds and these people that are against what America really stands for. I mean, have you ever – I mean, just think back to when you were – you know, I don't know how old you are, but think back when you were a kid. Did you ever think the country would turn out the way it is right now? I mean, how things are going, how messed up things are. Did you ever really think about, like, reflect and say, wow, things are pretty messed up, man?
I mean, you know, to me, out there – was Jimmy Carter being president. I mean, that was like, whoa, Jimmy Carter was president. You know, that's how. So, yeah, you might think I'm in that regard, I'm a little bit old school, but, oh, Vito says Hank remembers the Alamo. Not fondly, though. Not fondly. But seriously, I mean, you know, that's, I mean, I never would have guessed. I mean, you know, to think that people are literally talking about RFK Jr. like he's this sort of maverick paragon of going against the system. Are you kidding me? I mean, why are people buying? This person literally was bred and created by the very, I mean, the Kennedys were the Bidens before the Bidens. Literally. I mean,
that's right. That's right.
You know, I mean, and people are like, oh, and you know, there was a meme going around for a while of Trump looking at a picture of JFK and saying, I'll finish what you started. And it's like, good God, no, please no. You know, I mean, but people trying to,
you know, the famous quotes.
Yeah, it's like,
you know,
those
famous quotes, they spun out of context.
Yeah, I mean,
for JFK, you know,
I love Trump, but it doesn't mean I think all the Trump supporters aren't all that smart. I mean, there are some Trump supporters that are as dumb as the people on the other side, so to speak. I mean,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
and that's another danger. As much as I want President Trump back in, we have to be careful that, you know, blind following, blind faith, blind loyalty is as dangerous as vociferous dissent is. You know, I mean, dissent for dissent's sake is not a good thing, but support for support's sake. I mean, you know, do we really want a bunch of Trump supporters?
Trump made a lot of mistakes.
He made a lot of mistakes. I mean, and not the least of which was the people he trusted. You know. You know, when you looked at who he was assembling for his cabinet, you know, you think, wow. I mean, Elaine Chao is an example.
I'm sure
she's a nice enough person and all, but I mean, you know, you look at their background, and that's why I said Patrick McHenry from your state. I mean, may seem like a nice guy and everything, but look at who he's worked at. He's worked under Karl Rove. He's worked under George W. Bush. He's worked under Elaine Chao, which is, you know, Mitch. I mean, that doesn't exactly
the people we preach against. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't exactly. That's not exactly, like I said, that's not exactly a murderer's row of anti-swampers. You know, I mean, look, there are times when Mitch McConnell has done good things, and there are times, you know, all of them. But the point is, when they don't, we don't just simply say, well, there's an R in next to his name, or he's a conservative. No, if somebody does something that's not within the founding principles, then it's not good. And we don't just go along to support him because he'll get it right next time. No, you know, you don't. And that's why I say, you know, we're talking about in this gun thing, you know, all these people are saying, you know, we've got to have sex education. We've got to teach this. Wouldn't you think that the most normal thing would be then, well, we may as well teach gun safety since the kids have guns anyway. No, of course not.
That's
right. There you go.
I
mean, you know, I mean, if we're going to if we're going to get rid of guns, then let's take every 12-year-old who might rape a girl and cut off his crank. Well, of course they're going to say that's cruel and unusual, which it would be, of course. But the point being, you know, I mean, if you're going to use analogies and if you're going to use logic, then apply logic where it needs to be applied. So. I don't know.
That's
it's,
correct.
You know,
our leaders are involved too much in the social aspect of our lives. You know, I mean, that's another thing too. The social issues, the government, they're always involved with what's going on in our homes. And really, when did this happen? I mean, you just look back. Like I said, I just can't believe it. How much has changed since Jimmy Carter that you mentioned?
Yeah.
Oh my
lord!
But
I mean,
I appreciate you taking the call.
Oh, not at all. But you know, you think about it, part of it. You know, the age of the internet explosion. I mean, you know, when internet was internet. That was one thing, but when it became available on every phone, on every device, you know, in defense of some of our leaders, you know, their lives are no longer private either. You know, I mean, I'm not saying that their lives should be hidden, but everyone has a right to some semblance of a private life at some point, you know, and it's,
we're losing that.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Well, Joe, thanks for calling in and, For folks that remember District 65, North Carolina, his filing will be coming up. So North Carolina voters, especially in District 65, get the word out. If you're nearby, if you're in Georgia or South Carolina, Virginia, get the word out as well, because you must know people in that district. So
That's right. That's a very important message you just said right there. Yep. Together, we got to spread this thing like wildfire. Grassroots candidates across the board. Get these incumbents out of there because obviously they haven't done the job they said they were going to do. Get some new faces in there. Support those people. And be involved. Get involved.
Yep.
Remember, just because you're electing these representatives doesn't mean that you still don't have a voice anymore. You know, that's very important.
Exactly.
You are the
Absolutely.
Power.
Absolutely. Yep. You are. Exactly. They're working for us, you know, is what it boils down
that's
to.
Right.
So, well, Joe, thanks for calling
All right. Well, thank you.
Not at all. We'll talk to you later.
All right. Take care, man. God bless the Republic.
God bless. Great guy. Great cutcaster. Great patriot. Joseph Gibson, District 65 in North Carolina. So you North Carolinians, keep an ear open. Keep an eye open. It'll be an important time. As he said, 2024 is extremely important. It's not just about getting a president. It's not, you know, it's across the board. As I've said in my text messages with my crew, as I call it, and it's our crew. It's not my crew. I'm not any some kind of don or boss or anything. But, you know, it's not just, you know, Dopey Joe mistakenly or against the wishes of his handlers has said, you know, it's about who counts the votes. Well, you know, it's about our elected officials, not just at the certain level, but, you know, who's your supervisor of elections? Who's on your school board? You know, who in your county is collecting taxes? You know, think about that and how it's being used. I mean, that's all important. That's why to simply worry only about president or only about your federal officials, not even. It starts at home. You know, it starts in your home district. I mean, if your home district is a mess, then and you choose to stay there, you're pretty crazy worried all about what's happening in Washington. Unless, of course, you are one of those who believes that Washington be sending money to bail people out for stupid decisions. Then I guess you'd care on that level. So, yeah, it's going to be important. It's going to be very important. Here's the rebirth of Lois Lerner Mark II, an IRS contractor, was arrested for revealing leaking tax returns, which included President Trump. Now they're saying now they're trying to put a lid on, say not, they're not specific, but this guy leaks tax returns. Now he's only a contractor, people are saying. Well, he's only a contractor. But he leaked the taxpayer returns in 2021 when Dopey Joe was trying to tell us that rich people were going to pay taxes. By the way, since that, all that time, Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, Bloomberg, Bill Gates, Warren Buffett, whoever, they're not paying a dime more than they were. Remember they were going to pay it all or pay their fair share, carry the weight. Not happening. But anyway, so this guy has released returns. Now, here's the thing. What happened to Lois Lerner? Nothing, of course. Nothing, exactly. Exactly, nowhere. Nothing happened to Lois Lerner. So guess what? This guy felt no compunction about doing it. He saw someone else get away with it. That's why I say, you know, when people are talking about McCarthy saying, well, it makes the Republicans look like a shit show. Well, what have the Republicans done that inspires so much trust? Look how quickly they are able to get impeachments against President Trump. Look how, especially the second one, that was a landmark record time. And of course, you know, now we're still waiting around for this. But yeah, this guy, what's his name? I just closed it because I was tired of even thinking about the idea of the IRS in any way. Charles Littlejohn, a 38-year-old Washington resident. Now, I don't know if that means Washington State or Washington, D.C. But, yeah, it linked the tax return information disclosures of some of the nation's richest men and President Trump by liberal organizations, ProPublica and the New York Times. He stole tax return information and disclosed it to a news organization and then stole tax return information for thousands of the nation's wealthiest and disclose this tax return. I mean, you know, look, as I said, I'm not out there to champion the – I'm not anti-wealth, by the way, in any way, shape, or form. I think wealthy would be a good thing to be. But, you know, there's a difference. You know, look, I'm against people like Warren Buffett saying that they're, you know, looking out for the little guy. I don't need any tax breaks. I notice he never stops taking advantage of them. You know, I'm against duplicity, not against wealth at all. I mean, wealth can do good things. Even some of the crappy stuff Bill Gates does over the years, done some amazing things around the world. I mean, you know, I've never seen a poor person build an orphanage. How's that? Let's put it that way. Never seen a poor person solve the hunger problem. So, no, I'm not against wealth. But, I mean, in this case, this is a guy that's releasing. He's facing a single count of unauthorized disclosure of tax returns. Could result in a maximum prison sentence of 5 years. I mean, how does this happen? I mean, I get that there are whistleblowers, you know, who would release information about an insider breaking the law inside the Beltway, inside the Capitol, inside wherever. But, I mean, that's just vindictive. And that's a dangerous person for a lot of different reasons than a Ted Kennedy was dangerous or an Obama's dangerous or whatever. I mean, that's a dangerous person who has that kind of vindictiveness. So anyway, a couple of quick internet laughies before I go to some college football. First of all, first one, this is from the Babylon Bee. Biden deploys troops to border to stop Texas from securing the border. And then another one. Feinstein death not expected to affect reelection campaign. Oh, that's cool. Cruel. I mean, you know what? I said it before. I hope Vito doesn't get too mad. I'm not going to lionize Dianne Feinstein here. Not going to pretend that I'm all upset or that she was this wonderful public servant and all that. I'm not going to do that. I've told you why. One, she was disgustingly corrupt. Two, she was disgustingly corrupt. Talk about an elitist. Talk about a self-serving. No, I'm not gonna. Vito's right. Lois Lerner did exactly what she was told to do. Get rid of the Tea Party. The establishment rewarded her by not doing a damn thing to her. Correctamundo. Correctamundo. No objection from Vito on my Dianne Feinstein thing. You know why I have that thing on her? Because, like I said, she was corrupt. She was evil. I mean, I don't think I'm. Maybe I need to sugarcoat it. I just think there's just no redeeming value. How's that? Is that a good way to put it? No redeeming values. So anyway, gonna take a quick break. It is fall time. It is pumpkin time. So back to the Great Pumpkin Waltz for a little break music. Come back. I'm gonna talk some football. Thank you. Poly Sports here on Global Patriot Radio, which can be found at blogtalkradio.com. Mondays, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, the Vito Esposito Show featuring Vito and Big Al, Mama Mia No Sharia. Wednesdays, it's me, Hank Jones, at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, talking politics and sports. And then Saturday nights, Minister Usama Dakduk and the Beautiful Christie, 10 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time, revealing the truth about Islam. There's a bonus with that show. It means you don't have to, if you're on the East Coast, or even Central Time, it means you don't have to stay up and watch Pac-12 football. Look, I'm just kidding. So it's our college football segment. I thought the crew would be on today, but they've got stuff going on. So let's sort of recap. Over the weekend, Coach Prime in Colorado lost again. A valiant effort, but did anyone really believe they were going to pull it off, other than ESPN, of course? No. USC was going to win that game, and just like Colorado was going to win. Great effort by Colorado, but they're not quite there yet. Everyone's talking about Georgia struggling. Guess what? Ohio State has struggled. Every other team in playoff contention is going to struggle at some point. What's the difference? None whatsoever. It's the hype and media bias that changes the complexion of it. Nothing more, nothing less. Thus far, football playoff committee and the NCAA or whoever's running that crap show said they have not reconsidered a new playoff format for 2024. Remember, that's when we go to 12 teams. They might want to get on that because, or maybe not, actually. The Lord knows conference alignment in 2024 is probably going to only apply to 2024, but you're going to have probably no Pac-12, or you're going to have a Pac-12 with numerous teams that aren't traditional Power Five. And you're going to have a Pac-12 that doesn't have the kind of money anymore. So there's that. Alabama's back. Remember, Alabama beat Ole Miss and then Mississippi State, so they're acting like Alabama's back. Alabama still has to play some real teams. So now LSU lost to Ole Miss. That's one of those shootout games. Not a lot of defense in that one. So, yeah, Alabama's defense is doing the work this year. So there is that. The Big Ten, Michigan and Penn State kind of coasted. Michigan beat up on Nebraska, Penn State on Northwestern. Minnesota had a tough time with Louisiana. Believe it or not, people were calling for P.J. Flexhead at halftime, I guess. Maryland trounced Indiana, who then fired their offensive coordinator, which, by the way, did not go unnoticed among Hawkeye fans. Purdue whopped Illinois. It was a close first half, and then they just ran away in the second half. Tyrone Tracy, I've talked about him before, former Hawkeye. I met him on a paddle here in Orlando. Super nice kid. Has switched from being a receiver, which he was at Iowa, and part of his time at Purdue, is become a running back again. That's what he played in high school. 112 yards and a touchdown. He's definitely becoming more featured for them. He is also returning kickoffs. A really good kid. I wish we'd have utilized him better at Iowa. But, you know, he wasn't recruited as a running back. He thought he was going to play receiver, but he's playing. It's working out better as running back. Good for him. Really happy for him. They come to Purdue to Iowa this week. Cade McNamara, Iowa's starting quarterback. He joins tight end Luke Lachey on the season-ending injury list. This week, Nebraska and Illinois on Friday. Maryland at Ohio State on Saturday. That's going to be good. Two undefeateds. Here's the interesting thing. Ohio State is a 20-point favorite, and the over-under is 57.5. Rutgers is at Wisconsin. Wisconsin is favored by 13, and the over-under is 44. Howard at Northwestern. Of course, no line on that because Howard is a FCS team. Michigan goes to Minnesota. Michigan favored by 19 with an over-under of 46. And, of course, as I said, Iowa hosting Purdue. There's a lot to unpack in the Hawkeyes right now. Let's start with last week. Cade McNamara, as I mentioned, got hurt. It was a tough battle against Michigan State. It showed a couple things. First, the offensive line definitely still needs work. I'm not saying it's better than last year. but it needs some work. Second, this team and staff needs to figure out a way to play from any field position and do it with a we can score mentality. You cannot, I mean, yes, you get pinned into your own zone, you know, you're back against your own goal line with a punt or whatever. But that doesn't mean you always default to a quarterback sneak or an off tackle. I mean, you've got to, I'm not saying go crazy, but God, there's a lot you can do without taking too much risk. Cade McNamara was probably an injury waiting to happen. The manner in which it happened, though, was borderline crazy. Why is a quarterback with questionable legs? Hell, the Penn State game showed they weren't questionable, showed they were unhealthy. Why is he dropping back into his own end zone and then running from it? If you saw it, you see the way he plants his left knee, and it's, you know, it's, that's it. Seriously, if there isn't enough confidence in this offensive line to bust out 3 yards with a running back, or even a fullback in that situation, fine. But putting the quarterback in that situation, it would seem to me that an offensive line you don't trust to bust 3 yards for a running back isn't one that allows for a weak-legged quarterback to drop back in his own end zone, or a quarterback draw, designed or not. I know, everyone expects Iowa to run that play, but we're usually good enough to execute it. Alas, anyone remember the pitch to Akam Wadley back in 2017 resulted in a safety for Penn State? That's the kind of stuff you don't want to see. But other stuff, I mean, that was risky because it's a pitch. And Wadley had, let's face it, Akam Wadley had a history of fumble problems. So there are a lot of reasons you don't run that play. But, I mean, you can even run off tackle, but you can run play action even. So, yeah, it might really be the play calling. I'm not saying Brian Ferentz can't call a good game, but he's either overthinking things or he sees stuff that simply isn't there. I'm not sure. And, look, while the loss of Luke Lachey earlier and now Cade McNamara last Saturday, we have that. We also have concerns in the backfield. LaShawn Williams and Kamari Moulton are certainly decent backs, but there's a reason Caleb Johnson, Jazzy and Patterson started the season on the top of the depth chart. And, of course, the media listened for every negative intonation from Cade McNamara and the wide receivers last week. And folks, of course, were pushing for more throws to the wide receivers. Guess what? We got seven dropped passes from that group. Yeah, I think I get why Cade and later Deacon Hill like throwing to their tight ends. Of course, Cooper DeJean came up huge with the early interception and then the go-ahead punt return TD. But how about our linebackers as well? How about our linebackers? You know, I've talked about Jay Higgins, but Nick Jackson is starting to show his stuff too. Those guys are fantastic. They really are. They both have a nose for the ball. They just know where they need to be on the field. So, look, my closing thought on last week, a much-needed win, and as a fan, that's all I can expect. I don't care about the Brian Ferentz line, how much we have to score, much as it will cause media furor, nor do I care whether the defense gets all the TDs or the points or not. I really don't care. I am worried about our run game, and from what I saw from the wide receivers last Saturday, the running backs will not have the over-the-top worry of opposing defenses for at least another game. But it's also obvious to me Deacon Hill has the arm to push for those deep shots. So if the offensive line can provide even a modicum of protection, that may help immensely in that area. This week, look, Purdue at home. Up until last Saturday, Purdue has not looked all that great. Like I said, Tyrone Tracy has done well, and I couldn't be happier for the kid. Other running back, Devin Maccabee, has fumble problems. Simple as that. He's got fumble problems. But their offense did get it going against Illinois, which does kind of shock me. Illinois, part under Brett Bielema, has been better defensively and usually has a couple of reliable guys on the offensive side of the ball as well. Not sure that their defense is all that great. And hopefully our offense can regroup a bit. But no, I don't think Purdue's defense is anything special. If I am Kirk Ferentz or Brian Ferentz. I look to establish the running game. Yes, I would also continue to utilize our tight ends, but I would also push getting the wide receivers involved. I mean, look, until our run game is successful or we can easily take the top off their defense, our play-action game is going to be inconsistent at best, which doesn't mean it'll never work. It just won't be something we can count on. I mean, play-action doesn't work if your run game's not working, but your run game is going to have problems if there is no threat to take the top off the defense. And look, if you've got to use the horizontal passing game for a bit, use the tight ends down the seams. Make that your deep game for a bit until your wide receivers figure out a way to get separation and your line and your play callers figure out a way to work in the right play. I mean, early in the season, second or third play, on that drive, we got a touchdown. Seth Anderson was wide open against Utah State because the play action worked. They were expecting us to run. The play action worked. So, you know, there is a time to work it. It doesn't always have to be on third down. I mean, I just think, like I said, I think Brian Ferentz overthinking things. So I'm not going to make a prediction other than to say, look, I'll make a prediction to this extent. I do think the Hawks win. But let me call the other games first. Okay, Maryland, Ohio State. I think Ohio State is going to win. I don't know that they cover. I think the over-under, I think that gets crunched. 57 is a very low number for those two teams. Wisconsin, Rutgers. I think Wisconsin can cover, but I'm convinced Rutgers is a decent team. Northwestern, Howard. If Northwestern loses that game, they should be kicked out of the Big Ten, seriously. And then Purdue, or Minnesota, Michigan. I think Michigan covers. I think they throttle the over. I think Minnesota, from what it's looking like, they're just not that good this year. And Michigan is still – now, I'm not sure Michigan is the best team. I think Penn State's a really good team, and I think Ohio State is always going to be tough. But I think Michigan is not going to have a problem with Minnesota at all. I think they cover, and I think they throttle the over. The one where I question, Wisconsin-Rutgers, that could be a very defensive ball game, so I don't know that the 44 is necessarily reachable. 13, though, I could see Wisconsin winning, 20-7, 20-6, absolutely. Maryland, Ohio State, I think 57 is way too low. I think Ohio State's defense can be scored on by a good offense, and Maryland's got a good offense. They've got a really good offense. So, yeah, I think they should, Ohio State should expect to get scored on. So, Iowa-Purdue, the leading rusher coming into the game for either team is Tyrone Tracy. 288 yards. Guy's got 5 TDs on the season. So he's had several rushing TDs and that kickoff return TD. We're favored by 2 with an over-under of 38.5. I could see the over-under. I could see the over. But if the over is met, I think Iowa wins by more than 2 points. I don't think this is a 24-20 game at that level. I just don't see it. I don't see Purdue scoring that much on us. And I also see us, if things go right, I see us where we could score. One, Deacon Hell is a different animal. They've never seen him. They saw, Purdue has seen Cade McNamara. But they don't have much on Deacon Hill. He didn't get much action at Wisconsin. Redshirted his freshman year, played very much mop up last year. So no, I don't think they have much to go on in looking at Deacon Hill. We have a lot to go on looking at Hudson Card. We certainly know Tyrone Tracy, although not as much as a running back, but still, we know his tendencies, we know his skills. So, that's going to be – I just think it's going to come down to, one, be willing to take some chances. They've got to – I mean, I get that Kirk is conservative, but they've got to be willing to take some chances sometimes. And I get it. When you're pin deep after a punt, that's iffy. And it's tough to put pressure on your own punter You know, you expect him to keep flipping the field. You know, that's going to backfire. At some point, a punter is going to hit a shank. Every punter is going to hit some kind of a shank or a less than stellar punt. Michigan State's punter was killing us last week. And he had one shank, and then his next punt, he line-drived it. Cooper DeJean had so much room for that punt return. That was huge. That was a huge, huge play. Can't expect that that's going to come your way every time. But I think Brian Ferentz, Kirk Ferentz have to be willing to take some chances offensively. I think they also have to, you know, I think they've been moving guys around on the line. I think they've got to be willing to do more of that. They've got to be willing to pull guys who aren't cutting it. But they got to, you know, they got to do it across the board. I mean, it's one, you know, I get that Spencer Petras may have been the best answer at quarterback for a while. But, you know, you're willing to pull guys off the receiver positions or off a linebacker or whatever. If you're going to do that, you've got to be willing to do that with your quarterback as well. And I think in this case, Deacon Hill isn't an issue. I mean, Joey Labus has got some, you know, we've got a little bit of history. He's got a game under his belt. So, you know, they can't be afraid of that. But I think they've just got to take – they've got to go down – got to be willing to go downfield. They've got to be – you know, Deacon Hill's got the arm that he's – you know, it's not going to kill for him to overthrow a few guys. As long as they know that we're willing to take those chances, that's going to keep their guys honest. Hitting them, of course, is more than a bonus. It's the be-all, end-all in that case. But knowing that we're going to take those chances – I think our pass blocking is actually adequate enough, better than the run blocking has been. So that's a real key. That is a real key. So I'm going to call Iowa to cover. I'm going to call it 27-14. I think Purdue gets a second touchdown at some point, some kind of garbage touchdown. But I think the Hawk defense really only gives up so this. Starters only give up 7. So there's that. Okay, we've pretty much come to the end of it for tonight. Thanks, Joe Gibson, and for the phone call, and Duck and Vito for being in here. Vito, I do not actually remember the Alamo. I remember visiting the Alamo in San Antonio a couple times, but no, I was not there. Just want that cleared up. As I said before, you know what? We've got to stop. Just stop. Stop accepting that we can't change things, or that just things are just are because they are. Stop accepting people trying to change our Constitution and the founding principles of our country. Stop accepting it. Stop supporting people who are against our country's founding principles. I'm not saying quit Facebook or quit, but I mean, you know, give another ice cream a try besides Ben and Jerry's. And there's nothing wrong with being on Facebook. Just don't advertise. Don't buy from people that advertise on Facebook. You know, there's ways to utilize without, you know, I mean, you got to use public transportation as an example, but that doesn't mean you stop using them because you're against the bus drivers union. If you got to use public transportation, you got to use public transportation. Not everybody has a car, or not everybody wants to drive a car, for that matter. But sometimes you have to, you know, sometimes you have to use things that you don't support. But that doesn't mean that you throw the baby out with the bathwater. I'm just saying, don't advertise on Facebook. Then don't give Mark Zuckerberg your money. Other people are already willing to do it. But don't openly support institutions that are against the founding principles of our country. I think that's a fair point. I've said before, I've never really been a big boycott type person, but I understand it more now. I understand why people boycotted Bud Light. I understand why people boycott, you know, companies that just do gross stuff. You know, we don't have to hear it. We don't have to listen to it. It's our right not to. It's just like talking about Brother Warren. I support his right to free speech. I also support my right not to have to listen to him or not to have to entertain him on my show. Nothing more, nothing less. Folks, have a great rest of your week. Have a good weekend. Go Hawkeyes, of course. Be safe out there. A lot of creeps, but, you know, at that time of year, when you get into a change of seasons, weather can turn on you. Things can happen. You know, it's hunting season as an example. So if you're out hiking in an area where there's hunting, be safe. Know where people hunt. 0.9% of hunters are good, safe, reliable. But there's the occasional wackadoo, like the guy in Florida that, even though the game warden was talking to his dog, the guy thought it was a deer and caught the warden with a broadhead in the hip. Yeah, there are morons out there. So just be careful of that kind of thing. There are morons out there on the road, too. There are morons in the grocery store. Just be aware. Be safe. Most of all, be blessed and be a blessing, and God bless America. I'll send you off with a great tune that used to end the show This Week in Baseball. It's been a sports highlight-type song for years, Gathering Crowds. God bless football. God bless America.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.